Machine here, and you're watching Thorin's YouTube channel. 20-minute video for 2 minutes worth of content. Gold.
Speaking of underrated, if there's a game of Sups flavour I underrated, I think it's got to be Blue Raz. It's one where when I initially tried it, I don't know what frame of mind I was in, but it tasted way too intense. It had kind of like a strange aftertaste. I remember even thinking, what is Blue Raz? Like, what fruit is it referring to? What flavour am I even supposed to be conjuring? But it's one that I found, it grows on you. Like, when I went back to it 2-3 times later, if I was in the right mood, basically, whenever, because the other gamer sups are very understated, they're nice and smooth, they don't have that chemical flavour. This is one of the few that I think has a real punch to it, a real kick. And when you're in the mood for something a bit zingy, this is the best one to have. And it's got like sort of a... Like I say, even the weirdness sort of grows on you over time. You're like, I'm still not sure what that is, but actually is almost like a quite refreshing instant, almost like a, if you just want to almost have a wave of flavour hit you in the face, that's what Blue Raz is. And of course, you could get 10% off your order with the code Thorin, Thorin. I'm, of course, the most underrated in all of esports, right? People don't even know I am esports, so logically they don't rate me correctly. Now, people might think or say, they definitely say, that I think I'm never wrong, and I think I know everything. Things I've never said. I might have joked and alluded to it as part of my persona to be cheeky. But, like, I've even done videos where I explain that I am wrong. Of course I am. I often give it up, as you know, by the numbers and other videos when things happen, especially, by the way, predictions I don't think were going to go the way they did, and I have totally opposite outcome. Now, with that said, I'm not often wrong. Now, the reasons why, there's a lot of logical reasons. I didn't just come out the womb being right. It took a lot of work. Like, I've put in thousands and thousands of hours of deep thought about the game. I have watched a lot of the games. Fuck's in a lot. I've watched every big match ever in Counter-Strike history, minus Source. I've modelled the game and come up with concepts of how a team is constructed. The joke is everyone uses my terminology now. People even say stuff like the third star. I invented that. That was from me. Like, that wasn't even a thing back then. All these things about, there aren't any support players all these years later. Here's my support player and a support opponent. Fuck off. So I've modelled the game, tried to look at it, contrast it to other disciplines of sports. I obviously have the experience, the 20 plus years watching, knowing the players, knowing the IGLs, having deep conversations with them, knowing internally how teams are actually set up, and what people do. But every now and then there's going to be a guy slip through the cracks, or your initial impression, like the Blue Raz example, just going to give you a different perception, or you look at what is going on elsewhere and you think they need more of that and less of this, and you don't necessarily look at how it's contributing to the holistic picture. So there are a few where I'll absolutely hold my hand up, like I'm going to in this video, and say I think I was wrong about these ones. Now, some of the later ones you'll notice it's a little bit more tenuous that I was wrong, but I put the context in which you were. Like, I certainly wouldn't have predicted those players could transform in that way or do a different role or add something that you don't appear to see with your eyes in the game. And by the way, let's just get this on the table right now before everyone gets a bit too smug. Pretty much all the other analysts, I'll just say basically all of them, all the other analysts, with the exception of one or two names on this list, their video would feature Simple, Nico, Device, Elige, Oscar, enough, Carrigan, enough said, bruh. Notice I don't need to have those on mine. That'd be, I was right. I'd just be the top 50 all time, pretty much. So I've got 7 names for you, and there are going to be some surprises in here, especially if you remember the old school foreign who first came on the desk, because some of these were the people I battled against and sort of ribbed a little bit, right? So we'll come straight out the gate with a big boy name. You might know, if you saw my interview I did with him when he retired, you might have a sense that I might have picked this one if you followed that interview. It's got to be Exist from NIP. Yes, the legendary, don't pick cash against me, motherfucker. That guy. Now, this is one of the most decorated players of all time. I don't know if people know that in CSGO, that he has like among the most trophies ever in the history of the game. More than some of the great players you're thinking of and the great winners you're thinking of. He has loads. I mean, remember, he even won like IEM Sydney with FaZe, obviously. He was a member of the Streak NIP that won 87-0 and then continued to dominate for the first 2 years. He was in the Alu NIP, which was still a very good team. He was in the mix in the majors, was in a major final and almost won one. He was in the Nip Magic runs in Auckland, where he did some epic things. By the way, he was one of the reasons in the cash 5th game of that Auckland final, they were able to beat the FaZe Clan team that was looking due for an era. Problem is, that team he was in and all the things they did, that was a big, I would say, construct for why I underrated him, because he had this loose style of calling, right? Problem was, in his case, this was the beginning of the game. No one's really figured out how to call the game properly. People are trying to do tactics and set executes and spawn and old school 1.6 and saw stuff like existence, etc. And they're still sort of being implemented. And people are trying to figure out how do you frag out but still do that at the same time. Existence himself had this battle until he later got shocks to do some of the mid-rounding. So as a result, you had early very games. They had certain aspects look genius, but wasn't always working as well. Western Wolves tried to do some of this, maybe with a little bit less talent. And what you thought was, it just frags about the server. It isn't like exists like outthinking these guys. If anything, maybe that stuff doesn't quite work, and he's just calling a very simplistic game, the most basic loose calling style, and they're winning out. And what do you know? He has, at one point, the two best players in the world, Getright and Forrest, at least top five players for the first year, and the two best in Sweden. Like, he has the perfect players. Not only that, they're not just players. You just have two good players. He has complete players with no overlap who've played together for years and won loads of majors and stuff together before him. Like, remember, you had Getright was the god lurker, the best player in the game, and the all-round player, mega clutch. And you had Forrest, this insane pistol player, aimer, second guy in, who's just going to dominate and run up the scores. At the end of the day, in that scenario, the joke is everyone thought exist was like, Forrest, go kill second. Friday, go first. Getright, win the clutch at the end. Like, and the joke is those aren't tactics, are they? That's just nonsense. Like, no one's really doing that. That's why it's used as a way of mockery or to poke fun at people. And then on top of it, notice where I said that. I didn't even mention one name yet. He had Freiburg as well, who in the early days of the game was a god entry, giving you way more value than you should be able to get. And then on CT was this monster spray down player. And by the way, big game player, like you saw in the majors, was MVP of a major, was winning key rounds in a major, was basically the reason they won their one major. If you look at the end of the tournament, like, man, live, how many pieces? Oh yeah, and there was one more name, wasn't there? Someone else who was often criticised, right? Fiflaren. Here's what people don't know. Fiflaren has an in-game leader's mind. It's why it was limited. So once he became an analyst afterwards, he's a guy where in the team, he was sort of a semi-in-game leader and a secondary caller. And at one point in time, early 2014, for Katowice, the one that they lost famously with the flower and shit in the bed, 944 against Virtus Pro. What people don't know is he was calling for that tournament. They took the calling off Exist and Fiflaren and took over that tournament, and they looked awesome right until the final where he underperformed and VP had like the tournament of their lives. So actually that made Nip go back from that and go back to Exist call. So I even thought at the time, maybe Fiflaren's an even better caller. Actually, maybe this even makes more sense for the team. Oh, but they've gone back to Exist because he was the one that was winning at the time. So a lot of this is contextual. A lot of this is stuff surrounding it. It's inferences, etc. Then you have the veto angle. Obviously, I put a lot of time in early CSGO. Remember, they didn't even used to be that feature on HLTV.org showing you the maps for the last 3 months and all that. You had to calculate all that yourself, and no one did. They just took it for granted. Like, Nip is always good on nukes, no matter what the year is. Oh, this team is always the best on Mirage. They never mind that years later they're not. I always used to study that a lot, and so I was one of the first people to try and track, like, are they correctly maximising their chances or fucking their chances up with the veto? And the problem is, early NIP, because they always thought they were the best, but actually, for a number of years after the first couple, they were like second, third, or fourth best. That meant that they had, in my opinion, a bit of a delusional gap between thinking they had the best map pool and maybe having a third or fourth or fifth best map pool. And so there were times when it looked like Exist picked the opponent's best map or refused to veto it when he had the option to, or didn't second round rotation veto it and let it be a decider. Now listen, Nip won some of those games, but again, it looked like it was some individual play. It looked like it was Nip Magic. It looked like it was winning clutches or being big game players. It didn't look like tactically you are better on that map. You do have a better read. You are more comfortable on that map overall. Now, the problem with that is it did look ridiculous a lot of the time. It caused him and NIP to unfortunately resent that analysis, and it made them get a little bit tetchy with me, which is why Getright did his famous comment on DreamHack, etc. Fans being idiots obviously riled it all up and said, ah, you hate them on them. Why do you hate Nip? And all that garbage for years and years and years. And that's made me hate Nip fans, not Nip. But then it probably meant that when I threw shots at Nip and joked about Nip, people thought I didn't like Nip and I despised Exist. Also, this is a weird angle, but because he was actually a star in the latter years of 1.6, not a superstar, but a star in the Swedish and international scene. If you don't know, when he was recruited to Fnatic, when they had to split and Getright and Forrest left to SK, this guy was supposed to basically be the replacement for Forrest. Right, spoiler, he wasn't Forrest in 1.6 and he was nowhere near in CSGO. So already, that already set the stage. We can't possibly fill those shoes. He's going to look like he isn't as good. Then, because early in that Fnatic lineup, they had the IEM 5 European Finals run, which is a miracle win, and he was the MVP of the tournament and fragged out with streaky shots. It made it look like this guy's going to be overrated forever, and spoiler, he was. In late 1.6, people used to act like this guy was a superstar. They used to act like he was at anywhere near the Forest level. He could make a team around him, whereas obviously you'd clearly want him as like your third star if you look at the way his career went. So then you come into CSGO, and he was a completely different player. He's not in any way playing in like a star role, but here's the thing that someone like Exist taught me. So like that famous quote, I can't remember if it's an Einstein quote or something, where it's like, you know, if you judge like a fish by its ability to climb a tree or ride a bike, then you'll judge it to be a failure, basically. Whereas the premise is, if you judge a fish by its ability to swim in water, it's fucking awesome, isn't it? That's what it's for. So the premise here is, if you judge your player only by what they are not, then you'll never really get the sense of the player. You've got to judge them by what they are and look at what that brings to the table. That's the key context to make. You notice how that's a much more interesting lens when people are making player swaps one for one. So I think this guy, let's go to why I did underrate him. First of all, I actually think he was an underrated fragger for an in-game leader. And I think this really showed in the later years. Like in the early years, everyone was fragging out, the whole team was fragging out, so it looked like all the numbers were getting inflated, and especially from winning all the time. But you see in the later years where they're losing games, they're in the mix there, they're not the top team. You actually see them like, man, this guy kept fragging for years and years and years and years. It really took a long time as an IGL for his fragging to go down in terms of stats to like a bad level. Even at the end, by the way, when his stats weren't good, he could still frag in terms of like a key frag in a round that might not look crazy on the scoreboard when it's a close game, when things are tight, people are nervous, when it's unexpected, you're in a final and people are thinking the stars are going to take it. Like, for example, we know the one of the great Nip Magic runs is, of course, Stream at Malmo in the native Sweden, where they weren't even supposed to make it, like, past, I'd say, quarterfinals. And they made it to the final and won. And when they beat Na'Vi, everyone thought Na'Vi was going to win this final. Everything suggested they would. But one of the reasons they didn't in a very close two maps is because Exist actually was better than, like, Guardian in this final. This guy really went ham, was winning clutches also. And there's another thing. This guy was a clutch player. In fact, I think actually of all the clutch players in history, I don't think he even really gets enough of a rep for that. Like, he was a much better yeah, they were sort of like every now and then in the middle of a game, where did that come from? He'd just win a clutch. Yeah, but he was really legit at this, actually, especially for someone who wasn't a star player in CSGO. I think that also showed really in the latter years. Like, you saw when he was at IM Sydney, he could just win a 1v1 against the greatest team of all time if he needs to. I think actually what he actually became later in NIP when his skills degraded a bit, it reminded me a bit of Lord in the old Pentagram and Polish lineups in late 1.6, where he was like a supportive player and he was nowhere near like a super skilled player, especially if he was playing against like NIP, SK, Fnatic, the top Swedish teams with all the crazy aimers. But if you put him in that game against one of those teams in a big final, it's 14-14, everyone's shitting their pants, he'll just suddenly become clutch, and as everyone's aim gets all shaky, he'll just win that 1v1 through sheer balls. That's what Exist was like. I actually thought, just like Lord, Exist was the player where, because you know he's not the superstar player, that gets in your head that he just wins those 1v1 once against you, gets that bigger, oh, it's bullshit, oh, it shouldn't happen, oh, so lucky. There's a million people with that story, though. That's why this guy's clutch, that's why this guy won so much. Even the whole angle of the trash talk, I know fans will always go, how can Exist trash talk Device when Device is better? Because trash talk isn't about who's better, it's about having fun, it's about prodding the other guy, it's about trying to get under his skin, get an angle on him, etc. Now, sure, I don't think you should like lie and be ridiculous, but the point is, you're just trying to mess him a little bit. It's a part of psychological warfare, and I think that helped, actually. And I also think, by the way, it helped some of the more chill guys, like the Forests of the world, get a bit more fired up and actually think, yeah, we need to fuck these guys up. Yeah, they did say that about us, and they don't believe in our cash. So I think that actually also helped the vibe of NIP and that sort of like vital force they had in the underdog Magic days where they weren't supposed to win, weren't supposed to be in these finals. On the whole veto angle, there is also the concept that came out in the interview I did with him, which is, to be fair, he was obviously, like most pros, operating on a scrimbuck economy, where what happens is you play the scrims, and in scrims you're dominating, or dominate on this map, or dominate in this way, and then you think, right, well, that means I'm the best team, and I can beat this team every time, and I'm smashed about that. But in the actual survey and pro official LAN matches, it doesn't go that way. Now, the problem there is I'm not watching the scrims, and I largely only care about what you can transfer to reality. So what I mean there is just I can see how he can have a different perspective, because pros do think differently. I mean, when it comes to map pools, by the way, there's a lot of pros, especially back then, don't even really know map pools beyond a simple glance. They might know, like, yeah, they're pretty good at Inferno. But, like, I've had conversations with world-class pros where they told me stuff like, I think we'll just pick map X and probably, like, just veto Y. And I was like, no, you won't be, because, like, first of all, your team never vetoes Y. You won't in this game. You always veto this against this opponent. And then, secondly, you're not even going to get a chance to pick that. That's their permaban. They'd be like, really? All right, I didn't know. It's like, I'm talking about top pros, guys. So, as a result, like, I think that the era of coaches is what fixed a lot of these vetoes. So to be fair, Exist looked like the worst back then. In some ways he was, of the top teams. But that's also because I think they had a slightly delusional view of how good it was, mainly due to these scrims that were maybe implying, like, where they don't have any pressure, they were the best. Who knows if they say so, but I don't think they're liars necessarily. I also will say he helped me develop another concept, which was the idea. I also used to use this with Fifth Larum, to be fair, which is when you've won as much as this guy did, there's no way you could be bad at your role at the time you won all those titles. It's just too many. Like, listen, I don't care how good you think Get Right and Forest are. I don't think you can really carry bad players to that degree. Now, it's not totally true. Like, I'll give you an example. I think if you take the most extreme examples, the outliers, therefore it becomes the exception that proves the rule. I think, yes, I do think actually Simple carried at the end Edward to a title or two that he didn't deserve, that he wasn't good enough to, and he actually probably was dragging them down. It's just Simple was like 1.5 times any other player in the world, so that was able to make up the difference. Beyond the most extreme examples ever like that, which is like, by the way, the equivalent of like Maradona playing for some team and making a win where they should be like the sixth best team. Beyond that, I think it generally applies, and it certainly, I think, applies to the career of people like Exist, Fifth Larum, etc. I used to think back then, because here's the logic I was using, it's the Bill Belichick, like, you always upgrade if you can. You always go for the next one. The problem I didn't realise was, it's not as simple as always upgrade. You have to upgrade the right piece that still makes sense. That's the key thing. So I used to think, well, yeah, they're winning, but just like Lerpa stopped with Fifth Larum back in 2013, 2014, maybe he holds them back a bit and they'd win even more with someone else. Well, first of all, in terms of Exist, except for the latter years, I don't know how many could have won much more, quite frankly, with almost anyone else. Secondly, we can't know with anyone else that they would even play as well and win as much because they won so much. And then thirdly, I don't think you really can look and say like there was a player who'd do all the exact same thing. If there was, by the way, he might not have been Swedish, or he might have been on Fnatic and not being willing to join or something. So I don't think it's actually as simple as that now I look back on it. Like, certainly you could speculate back then, but I actually think when you did see him and Freiburg leave the team, look, they weren't great players anymore. But I think you saw that the others had degraded. It wasn't just those guys that were dragging them. I think the whole team had gone over time, downhill, wasn't as good, wasn't as mega at their roles, was a bit stuck in old routines and ruts and had the same core for too long. I don't think that was just an Exist issue. It looked like it was early, because he was sort of the focal point and the lightning rod for the scrutiny, but I don't think it was later, quite frankly. So actually, at the end of his career, when I look especially at his CSGO career, the guy was a winner, was a proven champion, is a legendary player. So yeah, what more is there to say? Then I'll go to another guy who also has a pretty good resume, right? How about Taco? Two-time major winner, back-to-back. Fabulous resume at majors, by the way, if you go and look. Part of two potential eras, 2016, one with the back-to-back, which I then later declined. 2017, winning the 5 out of 6 tournaments, scored into the PGL Krakow, could have won that as well. His initial play when he joined Luminosity and his role when he joined is what was so deceptive about this guy. It really made him look, actually, like, why have they recruited this guy? Is he the guy who just makes a brilliant cup of tea, would have been the line back then. He looked individually shit. If you watch POVs, he had bad aim. He made silly rookie mistakes and just died at times. And quite frankly, he didn't fit the style of CS that Fallen had seemingly invented for Brazilians. Not just the up-tempo, what was it, the Immortal style, but this slow style, run down the clock, use numbers advantages, which was a very smart calculator stuff, or when he had lesser players, when he didn't have the Cold Zeras, the FNXs all in his team, he had some lesser talents and he was having to really make them work and use them like chess pieces and pawns on a board. I didn't think Taco fit that because of these mistakes, because of this bad aim, because of the fact that, like, who the fuck is this guy? And so you consider as well, when he was having all the success, he had Cold Zero, the best player in the world, the most consistent player in the world. He had Fallen, this high impact, sure streaky, but IGL and aggressive AWPer. He had Fur, one of the best, like, aggressive, raw aim riflers in the world. He had FNX, a clutch player, mega experienced, cool under pressure. And then you had little Taco, didn't you? So it looked like, well, there's the obvious odd man out, isn't it? What's this guy doing there? Get someone else good in there. Get in Bolts or something. Get in one of these other players. Get in Steel. Get in these guys. Or Henny or Lucas. That's what people even said. Even Brazilian fans back then, if people don't know. Then actually his combo with Cold Zera seemed, quite frankly, like it was a reason to underrate him as well. It looked like, oh right, so basically what he does is just because he has Cold Zera to follow up, because Cold Zera gets the kills and wins the round, it looks like Taco did an awesome job. Oh, he didn't really, he's just a meat shield running, and then Cold Zera just, it's like VIP armor for Cold Zera. That's what it felt like back then. But I've got to say, first of all, the idea that Cold Zera was just baiting only, like, no, he was amazing at what he did. He was the best follow-up player ever, probably ever, by the way. Maybe you could put, like, I don't know, because they play more aggressively. Maybe Get Right in his prime. Like, the problem is he wasn't as much of, like, the pack in that sense. So that doesn't really work. He was more on the outskirts. So I think that was overrated. But I also think it was overrated on the Taco side. Like, actually, he was doing a lot in that particular sense. Then he did talk a lot of shit early on when it was inappropriate and he wasn't a good enough player yet. So quite frankly, if you're the worst player and you're playing with, like, the best player in the world who seems to be carrying you, and you haven't got meaningful accomplishments yet, And then you're talking shit to Simple and telling him he won't get it online, or he's got bad aim or something, or he's like a bitch or something. Like, what? Like, again, you can banter all you want, but that made it look like this guy's just an idiot. He's delusional about how good he is. But I'll tell you what, this guy in Luminosity very quickly did become a solid player. And I think year on year got better and better and better until maybe 2019. He had quite a long career of improvement and getting to a good level, in my opinion. I think he actually is part of what enabled Cold Zero to be the monster he was to some degree. Cold Zero would have been very good anyway, but maybe Cold Zero would have only been 90% of what he was. And I think if you saw what Cold Zero's parted from Taco, even when he would have amazing performances, they didn't translate to wins in the same way. He could drop 40 on Inferno and they could lose Inferno, look stupid, and everyone said Fallen doesn't know how to call Inferno. Meanwhile, they had like the best CT pit player in the world in Cold Zero, and a guy who wins every fucking clutch on the B bomb site. It was ridiculous. Then, quite frankly, I think Taco proved to be a vital base piece. The reason I think the Luminosity in 2016 was actually better than the 2017 one, I think the 2017 one, Cold Zero, was better. That's what made them more explosive. And then Fur was fragging out. I think if you go to the 2016 one, as a team, it's more complete because you've got FNX holding it down. You've got Fur being a sacrificial entry. You've got Taco also. You've got Cold Zero holding back. You've got the Fallen factor. And I think in this particular team, that base of FNX, Fallen, and Taco was fire. It was so, so solid and on the same page, especially, by the way, on CT sides. I thought they did a really brilliant job with that dynamic. So I actually think there's almost a magical aspect when you're a great support player and you fit into the base. It makes you seem and makes your impact way bigger than stats could ever show, than the raw eye test sometimes shows, unless you know what they were going for in the game. This is where, actually, I have a parting of philosophy with Maui Snake, where Maui Snake, I remember, when they replaced Taco, technically he left and then they brought in the player, when Stewie2k came into Team Liquid instead of Taco. Now, obviously, Stewie2k had more success in Team Liquid than Taco did overall, because he won the Grand Slam and all those titles and was odds on to win the Major, blah, 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 whereas obviously Team Liquid under Taco famous, he was always second. Yes, they beat Na'Vi and FaZe and all the rest and SK, but they used to lose to Astralis all the time. His logic was, he was basically like, whatever, what, I hope I'm correctly saying this, if I'm wrong, he can correct me. It was something like essentially, like, what can Taco do that Stewie can't do better? Now, that I absolutely disagree with. First of all, I think they're fundamentally different players. Stewie2k is more of just a pure entry. Taco is your general all-around support that you just fill wherever you need. And then secondly, Stewie's a way better fragger. He might even have a better sort of like timing for when to do entries and stuff. He's just going to be more ballsy. He got better aim, etc. There's the thing. I think Taco is a much better support element. He can be less of an ego in the team. He actually knows when to sort of fall back. He can be way more sacrificial. He doesn't ever panic in the way I think Stewie sometimes did and get frustrated. He's not going to panic orb. He's not going to rush in there over and over again and brute force it. I think he had a lot more subtlety to his game, and crucially, part of it's because he came up under Fallen speaking Portuguese to him and learned the system. And I think they were very much on a similar page, and I wouldn't even be surprised if Taco also helped them develop some of those things over the years. I actually think this guy was very underrated in like 2v2s and 3v3 late round scenarios and clutches himself. Yeah, he didn't have good aim if you watched it, but somehow he'd win. It's one of those guys that shoot you in the chest, but he'll win by having better positioning or just doing a ballsy play. And I think in Team Liquid, you saw how key this guy was and how good he could be in big, big matches. This guy was way ahead of SK. He was beating Na'Vi every time. Basically, only Astralis could stop him. And they had Zipnix. Like, that's like one of the few people to massively outmatch him at his role. So I think this guy is one of the all-time support heroes. And there we go. The record is corrected. Now I'm going to pick one that you might sort of get. Listen, there's an obvious reason I actually sort of gradually over time start to chill on this guy a bit. It's obviously now my fellow analyst on the desk, one of the best in the world, Maniac. Now, the thing about Maniac is he never really hit the great heights of accomplishment of some of the names I mentioned before. Like, he was in the semis of a major, but they probably should have won that major, ESL One Clone 2014, or at least been in the final. He was on the Dark Horse Kaylee that stormed that Stockholm tournament. He played with Kenny S in the God Titan, where the team wasn't that good, but Kenny S was a god, and they were trying to force everything through him. It was a bit of a flawed lineup. The problem is, this guy seemed individually poor. He had bad aim. It seemed like he was feeding. He didn't seem very confident. He had a sea of red stats, some of the worst stats of any player on this list on his HLTV at all points seemingly in his career, especially during this time period. So let's start with the Kenny S lineup, because that is what skewed it. You had not only the best player in the world, the most dominant player in the world, but at the time, in terms of peak level, it looked like the best CSGO player we'd ever seen. And every game he was fragging out and he was unstoppable. So when he lost, You couldn't look at Kenny S. You had to look elsewhere. And since you had Existence, who was a mastermind, still out calling products and the Prime Fanatic, you had RPK. He was a god in source. Now, yes, he was having to be microed now, but he must at least have some skills. You had Apex's streaky but explosive entry. Probably should have been a third star, but he was forced in the second star role. It seemed like, well, the guy who's not doing it's Maniac, isn't it? He's just a below average support, fucking up the game, can't frag. Whereas actually, when I look back now, first of all, the extra fragging in terms of winning games needed to come from Apex, who I think was in the wrong role, or RPK, who wasn't at the level he was in 2016 and 2016. No, back then he was still figuring out the game. He was getting back into being a pro game. He'd had 2 years off. These are the players that were underperforming sometimes in their job, in my opinion. And actually, I even wrote back in the day a piece about Apex. I'll link it below if I can, like a column about how streaky he was, basically. If you want to see a team that shows you what Maniac could do, you've got to watch the games and watch how they're setting up tactics on T-side and watch how they execute. It's the LDLC team when it was ESL 1 Clone 2014, when he had Happy and Uzi and Apex. And Kaylee was the other player, of course. In this team, he was a key entry and supportive element. He really helped that structure work. Because in that team, Happy wasn't like selfish player, baiting, deathbot. No, this was like real tactics. They were a proper team. He was calling properly. And Maniac was one of the pieces that made that work. I'm telling you, go back and watch these games. I think he was a player whose play in the team outweighs the fragging in the end, if you know what he's doing and what he's helping set up. And actually, just, by the way, as an aside, he did even have an individual peak. If you go and look from like late spring to summer 2015, he actually had a bunch of tournaments where he's fragging out, where he was actually helping even carry sometimes Kenny when Kenny would have an off tournament, etc. And actually sort of had a nice little latter period in Titan before it then all fell apart as the squad itself fell apart. Now, I think this guy also, from talking to him, understands way more about CS than you'd expect just from looking at him as a player. I actually think in that sense, he's been very similar to other players I've had that experience with, like Fiflarin, Kassad. These guys really have good minds for the game and have their own specialties and their own lens and model for looking at it. So yeah, I've got to say Maniac, right? Even though, yes, because I was a big Kenny supporter, I went fucking hard as fuck at this guy back in the day. And obviously his stats were terrible on paper. Then I'm going to go with one where it's not like I ever said this guy was bad, but I did think he was overrated. And I actually think maybe he was for a little bit at that time, but later he was actually probably underrated in my opinion. And that has got to be Dennis. I'm talking about the Swedish Dennis. I almost feel bad for like the Sprout Germ ones, because you all really thought like I would actually put him in a video. No, homie. Like, no. I mean, first of all, I never said he was just pure bad anyway. Like, there was a period before the Nico one where he was all right. I'm talking about the Swedish Dennis that played in Fnatic and then an IPR in the early days, LGB. In fact, even SK Gaming briefly in 1.6, where I actually used to know him because I worked in SK at the time. Now, this was a guy, if you remember, in CSGO, who was in LGB when they were like a really strong dark horse team around the Katowice Major 2014 that VP won. They were the only team to win a map off VP. It was Mirage. It was in overtime. He was a member of the G2 team with Fox and Makaleli. That was one round from making the Collusion of Poker final, spoiler, and making Envious break up as a lineup. He was in the Fnatic team after that, that won 6 titles in a row and was supposed to win the MLG Columbus Major, but then you had the injury of Olof, and then they got smashed by the Carrigan Astralis in the quarters. This guy, and this is a key component to think of, was good in early CSGO, but then he quit after the LGB era. He quit basically, people don't know, just before. It would probably have been him and Olof Meister who got recruited to Fnatic. But because he quit instead, it was Olof Meister and Crims who got recruited to Fnatic. So that's a what if for you right there in history, although obviously it turned out to be brilliant for Crims and for Fnatic, didn't it? So because he came back when it was around the Kingwin time, he was just coming back to proper pro player. So actually his skills weren't at that great a level. He had to level up again. No one knew what type of player is he at this point in time. Is he supposed to be a semi-IGL? That was a rumour. Is he going to be like, man, what is he, a star player? Is he just in the mix? Where is he at this point in time? CSGO's moved on. It looked also like in 1.6, he capped out, wouldn't go any further. Plus he was sometimes trying to be like an AWP or something like that. So in CSGO, when he got to the Fnatic core, because remember the G2 run at Cluj was a massive fluke, everyone was thinking like, wait a minute, that core's already won. It was the greatest team ever, minus you. So now you've come in. Look, you're not Prolex. They're not as good. Like, the way they win wasn't as good. It was a lot more fluky. You're winning narrowly. Yeah, you're winning every tournament, but isn't that because you just joined all the best players and then you just got them back to the level again? And you're fragging a bit, which Prolex wasn't very good at doing. And then also, yeah, you're the piss around king. Listen, win a bunch of piss arounds, the team's going to win a lot of tournaments, right? Now, the problem was, he was the piss around king. He was amazing with pistols. But beyond that, I often thought he didn't have to do that much, or he had a lot of games that were just quiet and people just raved about the crazy highlights, which did look nuts. But they talked like he was as good as Olof or Flusher. It's like, nah, I'm not taking that. Now, here's the thing, though. Later, When he was coming to join Nip, I went and watched a bunch of his demos from this Fnatic, from the next Fnatic, when they did the Last Dance one the next year, when he was early NIP. And what I saw was this, man, when you watch his POVs, it was really impressive. Like, genuinely just wow. Like, his overall game, it was so impressive. He could, the way he would entry, he was smooth with his movement and how he would take the crosshair angles. His technique looked legit. He was dangerous. Like, he could just push up and get a bunch of kills really aggressively. His frags were very legit in terms of skill. The timings of when he would push and know when to, like, attack someone retreating or to dance on it. This guy actually was way better than I ever could have thought from just the stats or just looking at the team overall or watching just a general match and seeing just the odd round. You watch the POV and he was way better than I thought he could be. That was one of those examples of a rare player where you really have to see it through their POV. Then I've got a few more for you. These ones, like I say, they're a bit more tenuous. Like that one there, I never said he sucked. This guy I never said sucked, but I did think was overrated. It's got to be Amanek, the French player. Now, you have to remember, when he was in Misfits and even LDLC before that, he was being billed as this like, up-and-coming French star. Like, one day he could be alongside a Kenny S, a Shox, in one of these top teams. That's the problem. He was way too streaky for that, even as an AWPer. So, like, back then, no way. Then, this is what I couldn't have known, though. Because of his style of play, I could not have known that this guy could be a very legit sportive element. And that actually he could add to your team a top team. Because how could I know how good this guy's mind was, his mentality, his composure, I think is a big quality with this guy. This guy's a clutch player. He is good under pressure in general. He's a jack of all trades who can fill in all sorts of things on your team. Now, I do think when you force him to AWP all the time, when you want him to be a little bit more of a star like in Misfits, I think he's going to struggle there. He's not going to be good enough. But you put him into one of the supportive role player roles and without an AWP, or just in an AWP in certain spots, he's going to do a really good job, actually. I actually think he can be underrated in that regard. I just didn't want him specifically necessarily in G2 or Vitality, but I think certainly he could do a lot. Like, you put this guy on a team against, that'd be very interesting, right? As long as he's not the AWPer. Then I'm going to go with the Canadian player, Naf. Now, this one is an interesting one, because I thought in the early days, this guy was mad overrated, and I think he probably was back then. Because in late 2014, around the denial period, coming in Liquid, this guy was supposed to be this up-and-coming player, but everyone was billing him like he was going to be a star. And because he was streaky, he'd have these highlights and they'd be like, wow, he's incredible. And obviously, the 2016 E-League Season 2 Finals, everyone remembers that one where it was on overpass against Device in Stars, who was supposed to win, and this guy popped off. So everyone's like, wow, Naf is so good. But he wasn't like an Elige or Twists back then. Like, that was overrated. He was a streaky AWPer, trash rifler. He was all over the place when you watched his POVs. It was really messy. Then there was the toxic clips where it seemed like he was shouting at people and stuff. And then, even though it sounds like a weird thing to include, I remember being told by teammates of his that in one ear he's like partially deaf, like he had 10% hearing in one ear. So that makes you think, wait a minute, if this guy's streaky, he's all over the place in the game, he's being toxic to people and then overrating him, like, why would I pick this player to be a world-class player? No, probably not gonna happen, right? There's a lot of logical reasons it wouldn't. But here's the thing. One, you couldn't know how he would develop. I think he has some of the most development of any player ever, year on year on year, in Counter-Strike. And what a sick mind he actually has for the game. That's what you couldn't know. This guy's a really clutch player among stars, especially NA stars, which actually, by the way, makes the death angle even sicker. That means his mind must be even better if he's not getting all the same data we are or being able to geo-position in the same way. He is an all-around talent. Remember, back then it was just skill and aim that we were going off. He's turned out to be an all-around talent with a nice, complete game at this point in time. He leveled up in all regards over the years. That is extremely rare, no matter who we're talking about. Even great European players often don't in all regards. One or two, they get better, and that's what puts them over the top. So actually, I think by the end, this guy, I did actually underrate this guy, and I could not have known where he was going to go. Then I'm going to go with my last one, and that's going to be a little old in-game leader. It's going to be from the in-game leader inside. It's little old Snappy from Ence, isn't it? Now, in 1.6, he was just another player in a team called Roskilde Ravens that had sort of a fluke run at the IEM European Finals. It was actually the one a year before the exist one with Fnatic. He had Freeze in that team, by the way. Then in CSGO, it was years and years till he came to the Tier 1, which was with Heroic / Project X. Then, obviously, after that, he had the Optic lineup where he had Yugi and he had Config. Then later, he had Contact where he had all the people like Esperanto, Ships, he had Sphinx. Now he's in Ence. He had Sphinx and he had Hades and Dika. Now, obviously, he's gotten Valde and St. Pius. This guy was always billed as a fragging in-game leader. But the thing is, back then, I used to look and go, yeah, but first of all, he's not that great a fragger. Secondly, look, he just failed to use all his talents, right? He had Config, what did he do with him? Almost nothing. He had Sphinx, that never really went anywhere. Ships, that died on its arse. He had Esperanto, this guy looked way better in past teams. He even, by the way, this is a criticism I used to have back then, he even looked like he just refused to be the bait MSL style for config, and that was why config was us. It's like, this guy's not even getting the most out of config. But I'll say, by the way, props to Snappy. He's one of those people who's reached out to me when I would make this criticism and would just try and give me an interesting perspective. Like, I disagree, but here's why. He was respectful. He wouldn't just, like, antagonize me or be a dick like certain people would. I won't even say the names, but you know who you are, motherfucker. So, yeah, there's some people like that. Now, here's the thing. Let's look at this angle. Because I will say, you can sort of take some of the angles that go against him and spin them slightly differently. So early on, I do think he was overrated as a caller. Because in Heroic, he had Glaive, who I already knew was a very good in-game leader. And Glaive was part of the mid-rounding slash secondary calling. So that's what I think made that Heroic really dangerous. Why they could beat Dignitas and Astralis, part of why Carrigan got kicked to some degree. When Glaive left and went to join Astralis, instantly the team got less dangerous. He looked like a less dangerous IGL. But to be fair, that was early on in his journey as a tier one IGL lore. That's an experience role. You've got to really put in the reps to get really good at that in all areas of the game. And you can only learn in the matches and thinking about the matches. It takes a long, long time. You can't expect them to be good in a month or two. Then on the talent angle, actually the talent angle's aged fabulously for him. Like, look at who he did have. He had players like Valde, Modi, Dika. You could make an argument these guys have played their best Counter-Strike under him. Even Spinks by the end. It turns out Spinks just needed to develop a bit more. Needed a structure on him. Spoiler, Snappy even told me in contact, I don't have the structure because they'll only give me these young stars. I can't get some of the other pieces in, like a Valde maybe. So when you put the structure around him, then Spinks actually was one of the best players in the world. Never played better. Ships, by the way, never made it anywhere. I think became like an IGL or something and just fucked back off to the Bulgarian scene. Esperanto had way bigger problems than Snappy and faded out of the scene for a while. And Config was a head case at the time, would probably tell you as much. And when I interviewed him, seemed like he himself didn't know what to ask for, was a bit lost as a player. Then finally, on the fragging thing that seemed a bit overrated, actually, if you look purely at the POV and in context of each of the scenarios, he actually is a pretty good fragging IGL. The problem with those roles, by the way, because it used to be the same for Glaive, is aside from when Astralis won everything and his stats were inflated, stats don't really show how good IGL are at fragging. It can show if they're really terrible at fragging, but it doesn't really show how good they are, because you've got to see contextually what do they do on the T side for their team, and what CT spots do they play. And I actually think this guy did end up being legit in that sense. So there you go. There were some players in history I was wrong about, or I was right in some ways, and in other ways I didn't have the whole picture. That's one of the interesting things about Counter-Strike competition and life itself, isn't it? This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Hajou, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Oaks, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Pacey, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.